I am John in Brooklyn. You're listening to Lock to the Week Radio, the only show that will let me on the air.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
And it comes time, we know how Lincoln dies, you know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they are showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic, chanting USA.
Actually, this Cole Davis a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
No one puts the WGCs in a Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major fight, so chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MMA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot offer, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here on this special week for the state of Connecticut. Welcome to our show. Welcome here into the big Wednesday show. Here from Santa Monica tonight, amidst the setting sun. We're glad to have you with us. blogtalkradio.com/Dave in the City. No scheduled guests tonight, but we do have one little surprise for you coming up in just a couple of minutes. And coming up at the top of the hour, next hour, Kevin on the Cape returns for random questions. And if you're wondering why he wasn't available last week, he will provide the answer to us. It apparently has been a very eventful last 10 days for the Junkman. So we'll hear from him in about an hour. Now we will cover a breathtaking run by the UConn Huskies in their unbelievable. And I mean, you know, sometimes you say things are unbelievable and you're just, you know, you're kind of embellishing. This truly was hard to believe. They came in as seventh seed. They looked all right. I mean, they were doing well in their AAC tournament. Had a pretty exciting game against Cincinnati, maybe more exciting than it should have been. And a lot of guys felt pretty good about UConn and the Huskies going into the tournament. Shabazz Napier, Ryan Boatwright, pretty good backcourt, good defense. Kevin Ollie doing a pretty good job taking over for the longtime coach Jim Calhoun. And many people thought that the UConn Huskies were going to be good for a win or two in the tournament. And imagine, they went from that, nearly losing to St. Joe's, beating Villanova, to then suddenly taking out Michigan State and making them look ugly, taking out Florida in the Final Four and making them look ugly, and doing basically the same thing, although they had their own struggles in the game, against Kentucky in the national championship game, which concluded Monday. This has been a really good run for the UConn Huskies, and I think many witnessed the awe of this team. It was really surprising. And it wasn't pretty to watch the whole time, because you'd have these moments where UConn couldn't get any kind of scoring. They'd go on these droughts. They'd be turning the ball over a lot. It happened against Michigan State too, but we saw it on Monday night. Just some strange, even unforced turnover in some cases where Napier was just completely caught sleeping. And, you know, there was a little worry for a while, but at the end of the day, UConn never lost the lead. They led that game the entire way. And Kentucky came as close as 1 point behind, but that was it. That was as close as they would get the rest of the night. So the Huskies win their fourth championship in the modern era, meaning from the point that they upset Duke in 1999 to now, four championships for the men's team. And the women's team, I can't count the championships, but they won again. They won as well the next night. So this was a big week for UConn sports. Man, I mean, their basketball is just, whether men's or women's, just a huge night. And Gampel Arena, with a P, was packed for those two nights with fans and students watching the games on the large screens in the building. They had to make the screens because they didn't have a jumbotron in there. So that was kind of a scene, but it was really a lot of fun to watch the kids get so excited. And you saw the passion from UConn fans in Gamble Arena on Monday night. But that wasn't it, just it. That wasn't it. You saw the same passion during the Sweet 16 round a week earlier at Madison Square Garden. And would you believe these same fans dominated, just dominated the building in Madison Square Garden in those two games against Michigan State. And I forget who the other one was. Who else did they play? Oh, boy. Wow, I can't believe I forgot. Was it? No, it was not Creighton. I'll look at the bracket and get the word on that. But oh my gosh, it was really something. I mean, I was just mesmerized by the whole thing. I mean, I knew that, you know, they'd be pretty good. I really did not believe that they could go this far. Nobody did. I mean, that anybody who was a fan of the team could not really buy into the fact that they would be this good. A lot of people thought they'd be good. And so it really goes to show you that the skill and the experience of players who really want it in the form of Napier and Boatwright, and they were not perfect. Again, we mentioned that they had some of their own miscues in this game. But good coaching, good defense, and a good backcourt really are the three ingredients to a great victory. I mean, we've seen this before. Ty Lawson with North Carolina. We saw Kyrie Irving lead Duke to a championship. I think that might have been the 2010 championship, if I have my numbers correct. And that was against Butler, and they almost lost that game, but it was still, you know, just an exciting team to watch, exciting year to watch basketball. And 2014 is no different. In fact, I would even rate it a lot higher than the previous 4 years that preceded it, which had their own great moments. 2014 as an NCAA tournament may have been the most exciting, captivating, interesting, because you think about the teams that were involved. A lot of favorites. I mean, you're talking about Michigan and Michigan State, Virginia, Iowa State. You have big teams like Florida and Arizona, and they both went out as they ended from the Elite Eight into the Final Four and on. This is crazy. I mean, all those teams, they look good, but then, you know, everybody had their flaw. Florida had a limited offense. Arizona was not as good offensively as they wanted to be, and that caught up to them. And teams like Wisconsin, they're not little. They had Wisniewski, I forget his name, but Tarzewski's on in Arizona, but they had but that big guy they had that had carried them a little, and they were in the Final Four. They went against Kentucky, and they almost lost. And they lost at the buzzer, not on the buzzer, but they lost at the end with a shot by Aaron Harrison of Kentucky. So Harrison really had some magic in him with that shot and a shot in the game that preceded it against Michigan. We thought that he could have been in line for that magic on championship night, but their luck ran out. I mean, at the end of the day, it really went down to execution, and I think UConn had that execution down. They hit their free throws, and they managed to not do too much in error to keep them in the game and keep that lead safe. So it really goes back to three things: their defense, their fans, and their backcourt. And the fans, again, the team that I was referring to earlier at Madison Square Garden, the team they played the first time, I think that might have been... because they beat Florida. They came out of the East bracket. They took down... Oh, yeah. So UConn took out North Carolina? Is that right? No. They took out Iowa State. That's right. And that was kind of unfair because Iowa State was missing Georges Niang. He wasn't really a part of that. And so by then, you know, it was already too late. But anyway... UConn and their fans, I mean, their fans carried them in that game to an extent. They really carried them in the Michigan State game. I mean, did you see how loud it got? I mean, it was unbelievable. It was incredible. Truly a thing of wonder to see the Huskies just really overwhelm Michigan State. They looked lost out there. You know, you talk about Payne, Adrian Payne looked kind of out of sorts. That whole team, I mean, they were just, they were out of it. And you really have to give their fans a lot of credit. I mean, they literally carried that team along with the backcourt. Obviously, Napier carried them too because he was pretty good towards the end of that game. But they were going a while without scoring as well in the Elite Eight game against Michigan State. The fans willed them to that win. So that really was a tribute to them. You saw that same passion in Gamble in a watch party, you know, miles and miles away from where the championship game was held in Dallas at the AT&T Stadium. What a night, though, for UConn. I know that UConn's won a bunch of championships now in recent vintage, but this was still really, really fun to watch. And so we're really happy to congratulate the UConn Huskies. I'm relieved that we don't have to see this team that just turned on a switch and Kentucky win a championship. And I would have had a lot. I would have tipped my cap if it did come down to that, because that's a really talented team. It's actually pretty amazing how talented Kentucky is when you really get down to it. I think if circumstances had been a little different, if strategy had been a little better in that championship game, Kentucky would have had that championship. But that's in the past now. I mean, I think you gotta, when you talk about titles, you talk about teams that know how to play. And even though you can be an overwhelming group of talent like Kentucky is and was over the years, you still have to get the plays down. And Kevin Ollie got the plays down. I heard repeatedly from our friend John in Connecticut online that he felt like Kevin Ollie outcoached Izzo and outcoached, certainly he outcoached Coach John Calipari of Kentucky and outcoached. He even outcoached Fred Hoiberg in Iowa State, and I think he's terrific as a head coach. He really knows the clock. He knows the substitutions. He's really good. So to go through all that gauntlet of coaching and come out of it with a championship, I mean, that's as hard-earned a championship as you're going to get. And so this may have been perhaps the most satisfying of the last three championships for UConn. This is really just a sight to see. So congrats to the Huskies. I'm sure they had their parade by now. I'm not really positive about that. If you are a UConn fan, please call us tonight from now till the end of the hour, 424-258-9251. Yeah, we are looking forward to a good time there tonight. And, oh man, this is it's really been quite a tournament. I'm just remarking about how much has been happening. Really, really fascinating. We did have Captain on the line. That was going to be our surprise guest. He's not on now. I think I may have spoken a little too long about UConn, but I needed to do that because that was a big story. UConn is not the kind of team you would have thought of getting to the championship round. And as a result, a lot of brackets are busted. Same thing with Kentucky. They were just beating up all these teams. Wichita State, Michigan, and Wisconsin. All of those were pretty big favorites to win the title. And they're all gone. And you could really, I know they were all nail biters, but they did it. And I think that's really fantastic. So that squadron, the two Harrison brothers, I can't pronounce his name, but I think it starts with a P. I mean, that guy's just, you can jump over an entire team. P-O, what is his name? I cannot pronounce it. P-O-Y-T-H-R-E-S-S, Poitras. That guy is impressive. We will see him in the NBA. We will see his Harrisons in the NBA. I mean, this is and Julius Randle. You know, I mean, the Harrisons had been taking up so much of the spotlight. We forgot all about the guy who had been touted all along, Julius Randle, and he'd been playing pretty well too. So these guys will all make it, and it'll be a fun NBA draft. And then you just hope that one of those guys makes it to the Lakers, and we'll see how that one rolls out. So that is going to be some pretty good stuff. So, UConn, it on top again. And that's, you know, it's weird because, like, you know, you would think that if a team won four championships within the span of 15 years, you'd get tired of them. I don't. I feel like this is a team that, for whatever reason, you get really riled up and excited about them, and you really feel happy for their fans because they got good fans. I think that's a big part of it. And so that's a good community over in Storrs. I hope they're having a great time today and tonight and tomorrow and maybe even the day after that. The whole week, they'll be in for a good time. So now we switch gears now from the subject of basketball into that of baseball. We also will have a Masters preview towards the end of the hour, and we'll be joined by our friend Kevin on the Cape after that. But for right now, let's go to the telephones. I believe we have our friend Jerry and Piscataway on the telephone with us. Not too happy about what the Yankees are doing tonight, even though it's only been four games. But we shall usher him into the show. Jerry and Piscataway, welcome aboard. What's up?
Dave, what's going on, brother?
I'm all right. I gave you with a little extra time. I wonder if you've calmed down some. How are things?
No, I mean, I was getting excited till the ninth inning. During the ninth inning when, you know, the Yankees had two on and nobody out. But in typical Yankee fashion, if you can't get a fucking hit with runners in scoring position, and Solarte ends the fucking game in a fucking double play. I'm so sick of this goddamn team, Dave. You have no idea. Dave, you have no idea how frustrating it is. I would not have had such no expectations for this team if Brian Cashman didn't go out and spend $500 fucking million dollars on shit. And fucking Brian McCann's driving me crazy. Driving me crazy. He can't fucking get a hit. I'm like beside myself over here, Dave. He can't get a hit. I mean, you bring the guy in who's going to be your number four hitter. The guy can't get a hit. I mean, every fucking game, they can't get a hit with runners in scoring position. They have a guy on third and less than two outs. They can't get the goddamn run in. Then Sean Kelly has to come in and come fucking implode. I mean, the same thing as David Phelps comes in the other day. Fucking implode. They got no bullpen. Their offense is terrible. They got no farm system. Brian Cashman has to go. Enough is enough. He has to go. And if it hasn't been for Solarte the past couple of games, I mean, they would be in deep shit. He's really masked some of this offense's problem. I mean, the middle of their order is shifted on. They can't get a fucking hit. I mean, it's in-fucking-credible. But the second-highest payroll in baseball, they have an aging roster who underproduces. They have no farm system. They have a unproven and depleted bullpen. I mean, give me a break. Enough is enough, Dave.
Boy, this is week two. I what's going to happen in a month?
I just see it, Dave. I saw it from day one. I see this team's holes. It's fucking glaring.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Teixeira is not going to come riding in on a white horse to save this team. Mark Teixeira sucks. He barely has a .300 on base percentage. He's injured every fucking week. I mean, he's not going to come in and save this team. Who's going to do it, Dave? Who is going to do it? I mean, I like I said, the rotation I do think has potential. Tanaka, awesome. You know, one walk and 10 strikeouts in 7 innings. I loved it. But this offense is absolutely pitiful. When we're relying on guys like Brian Roberts, I mean, Kelly Johnson, nice player. I don't mind him. But he's not a first baseman. The fact that you knew you had Mark Teixeira, who missed a whole year last year, you know he's injury prone. The fact that you don't go out and get a backup third baseman at first baseman blows my mind. What is Brian Cashman doing? I mean, are you kidding me?
I can see the urgency in your voice. This is really something. Now,
I am irate. I am sick of this shit. I feel no connection with this goddamn team. The middle of the order is pitiful. I mean, it's insane. And they spent $500 million this offseason. I mean, Jesus. They'll give Pano 12 years. At least he'd be able to hit and drive in some runs. Brian McCann is an absolute joke at the plate so far. I mean, all I hear about how is he's going to, you know, hit 30 home runs in Yankee Stadium. The guy barely hits the ball out of the infield. And when he does, it's a weak pop-up. I mean, Jesus Christ, can you do something? You're not in Atlanta anymore.
I've not given up on McCann, though. I have him on my fantasy team, so I think he's going to pick this thing up at some point. I mean, vets always take a while.
I mean, I know it's early. Yep. I mean, I'm not giving up on him, but so far he's been awful, Dave. I mean, this team, I'm just beside myself right now. I mean, I watch these games, and I feel like two runs is almost like five. You know, they go down a run, and I'm like, Jesus, are they even going to be able to tie this game up? I mean, when they went down 3-0 today, I thought the game was over. And then, obviously, the bullpen comes in, shits the bed yet again, just like the other day. And, you know, I knew the game was over. I mean, they have two outs, and they have no outs, two guys on, and that was probably the quietest two outs, no guys on that I've ever seen. I mean, it's a fly ball to right, and then a double play, game over. I mean, come on. And I don't want to see Brian Roberts anymore, Dave. I don't want to fucking see guys pump 92-mile-an-hour fastballs right down the middle, him swing and miss, and then get mad at himself and hit the bat. I don't want to see it anymore. I mean, we're relying on Brian Roberts at second base, a first baseman who's not a first baseman, a 26-year-old rookie who spent his whole life in the fucking minors. I mean, Brian Cashman, what are you doing? Enough is enough. Like Tom said, he spent, you know, close to $3 billion, you know, doing things his way. And I think since 2004, he spent close to $2 billion, and they've won one ring. They have a depleted farm system. I mean, they're not in good shape moving forward, Dave. They're not. They gave a 7-year contract to a guy who, granted, I love the way Ellsbury's playing right now, but at any minute he can get injured. I mean, enough is enough. I'm fired up over here.
Yes, you are. I mean, you've really caught on. I will mention just to illustrate the point about McCann, career splits. I have it here in front of me. He hits .263 okay. in April, March, and he has only 72 RBIs in his career for April/March. But the rest of the time, he's averaging around 300, 271, 299. Although he doesn't do too well in August.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
He's hitting about 120 right now.
He should pick that up. I really think so. I mean, he gets his most RBIs in the month of July. I guess everybody does. But then May even, he's got 115 over his however many years he's played. And 99 in June, which isn't too bad. So let me just put it this way. If he ain't over 250 by May, let's say May 15th, then I think we can say he shot. But if he's over 250 by then, I think he'll be all right. May 15th.
I don't know, Dave. I just look at the money. Like I said, mm-hmm. I get crazy because they spend so much money and they have so many holes that I've gone over and over, and it just blows my mind. I mean, it's crazy. How can you not put together a complete team with a payroll of over $200 million. I don't get it. Other teams do it with much less. I mean, the Yankees probably have one of the worst infield defenses in all of baseball. Like, I don't get it, Dave. I mean, Brian Cashman has not done the job. I mean, it's easy, given a guy like Alex Rodriguez $270 million, whatever, $250 million that they gave him. It's easy giving Mark Teixeira $170 million. That's easy. You know, you have to go and you have to build a team around these guys. I mean, they have no backup for when Teixeira got hurt. I mean, they didn't have a third baseman coming into the season. They were going to use Kelly Johnson. And now with Teixeira out, they'd use Johnson at first and use, like I said, Solarte at third. They're just ill-prepared for different things. I mean, it's crazy. I just think a team with that many resources and that big of a payroll, they should be more equipped than what they are. I mean, a lot of teams do it a lot less, Dave. I mean, they have guys who can come up in the minors and fill in spots for, you know, 2-3 weeks if a guy's on the DL. They have, you know, guys who are able to start at the major league level from the minors. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this team spends over $200 million every year, and yet they have so many holes. I mean, Brian Cashman's, you know, his remedy for everything is writing a big check. He doesn't get creative. He doesn't have a farm system to make trades. I mean, that's on him. I mean, he's the GM. He has to get, you know, control of player development. He has to get control of the scouts. I mean, the head of the scouting department works under him. I mean, he's got to be held to the fire here, David. I don't understand why Yankee fans are delirious about this. I mean, I understand it's only been, what, you know, 8-9 games, but you could just see it. You could just see. You can see that the bullpen is not proven. You could see all the holes they have around the infield. You could see that the offense, with all the money spent, is going to have some problems scoring runs. I mean, you could just see it. And the fact that nobody's saying a peep about the job Brian Cashman did, it's blowing my mind.
Well, it's a crazy thought. It's I don't really think
it's
I'm that
$200 million
it's a lot
payroll.
Of money. It's a lot
and
of money.
They can't field a team.
It's bad. It's the bad. It's bad. Oh, man.
I mean, Jesus. I'm sorry for coming on here. I just need to.
You don't have to apologize for
that. I'm watching this game.
It was good juice.
I'm going crazy. I'm looking. The fucking Cleveland Indians are winning every night. I mean,
nah, they always start hot, but they always start hard, though. Don't get too wrapped up in that. I mean, they always start. They started hot last year, too, and they did nothing at the end of the year. So, you always have to watch
for that. They went, the Indians,
they made
they
the
went
one
on a run
game
to make
playoff.
The playoffs at the end of the year.
All right.
They had, but still, they had a win, basically almost went out for a week and a half to make the playoffs, and they did.
Well,
I mean, Jesus, I mean, there's so many. The team like the Rays, they have a small payroll. They run a great organization. David Price will be gone next year. You know what? They'll either bring up, trade for a kid that in 2 years will come up and be an ace, or they'll bring an ace up from their minor league. I mean, it's crazy. The Cardinals, they lose Albert Pujols. They don't miss a beat. And neither team's payroll significantly lower than the New York Yankees.
It's crazy. You're right. I mean, the Cardinals do a great job of that. But there's a little luck involved in that too, though. I mean, they've gotten really lucky with some of that stuff. Especially the younger pitchers. Pitchers don't always pan out. It's a real. I don't like saying crapshoot because it's such an overused term. But yeah, it's a roulette wheel. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But like you said, it takes good institutional knowledge and scouting to get that rolling. So. All right, Cap. Well, hey, you listen, I know it's not a great start for the New York Yankees. I'm sure there's more season to be played. You are certainly, and you're always welcome to come on here and vent with us. And hopefully, maybe things will turn around for you. We will see.
I'm hoping, Dave, because, I'm at the point now where it's like, I don't want to face reality. I'm hoping, like you said, Brian McCann will start to hit. Beltran started turning it on. He's going to start to hit. I'm hoping that this offense can start to get rolling a little bit because, like I said, I do like the potential of the rotation, which Ivan Nova is really pissing me off right now because he's throwing 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. He's got, a great hook, and this guy can't put it all together. I mean, he makes me pull my fucking hair out. But, I'm hoping the offense can get it going. The bullpen is a big worry of mine. Even with Robertson in there, they're all very – very unproven, and I don't know what Girardi doesn't see in Betances, but he pretty much is going to anybody but Betances. I mean, I don't know. The two outings I've seen of Betances, his stuff looked incredible. Hitting 99, throwing some nice sliders. So I don't know if Girardi doesn't trust him yet or what, but Penn is very unproven. I'm hoping that they turn it around. I'm hoping that this rant, we could all laugh about it in about 3 months, and we'll see what happens. But thanks for having me on. I just going crazy, and I don't want to type on my iPad because I'd probably break it. I'd be typing so hard. So thanks for giving me a venue to vent my frustration.
All right. No problem, buddy. Anytime. We'll catch up with you soon, my friend.
Later, Ed.
All right, buddy. That's Jerry and Piscataway. Not in a little bit of a frustrated mood with the New York Yankees. That's the scene right now. And in the American League, it's sort of up in the air. A lot of teams, nobody's really running away with a division this early. It's only 2 weeks, so it's really tough to judge who the best teams are. In fact, I looked at the Western standings, and it looked like everybody was 2-3 as of Sunday. Now I think it's a little different. Now, the AL West is situated such that, I don't think anybody really felt like it was going to be, anyone was going to run away with it. Some people were predicting the A's to win it. Some picked the Rangers to win it. Even a few others might have picked the Angels, but that's an old team. I didn't really see that. And you look at it now, and it doesn't seem like anybody's out of it. But again, 2 weeks. When you talk about baseball, in the course of a week, you can gain maybe one or two games in the standings in 1 week. You'd have to be playing amazing baseball, or you'd have to be playing really bad baseball to do much worse than a 1 to 2 game difference. So if anybody's ahead by more than two right now, then in their respective division, either the rest of the division is really bad or something else is happening. And adding to that is that a lot of times you're playing within the division in the beginning of the year anyway, so that really can't happen. Like there would have to be some overwhelming results if anyone was really ahead in any division this early on in the year. So when you talk about a guy like our friend Cap commenting on the team, he's really protracting what he's seeing now and where the issues are. But as we all know, baseball is a long season. We'll see how that how it goes. Yeah, and Brian McCann, just to stay on that for a second, I know they gave him a lot of money, but it is early. That guy always starts off slow. Not like Ryan Howard, he just starts really slowly. We would watch him with the Braves, and he would have his moments. He's not a consistent player. I mean, even the end, I almost shared this with Cap. I think I ran out of time, but his splits in August and September are not good either, especially September. The 252 average in September, an on-base percentage of 326, not really that good. But overall, he's a good player, and he will heat it up, especially at Yankee Stadium, and that will be very useful to them. I mean, again, we decided that their ceiling looks to be about third place at this point. All right, so that's baseball in a nutshell for the moment. Now let's get into the Masters coverage to round out our second half hour. We had a call from 978 just as Cap was winding down. If you are listening, please call us again. We'd like to entertain your thoughts. We'll get in touch with you and chat about what's happening. I think I might know who this is too, but rather than speculate, we hope to hear from this person as the rest of the hour rolls on. So while we do that, I'll provide a preview of the Masters tournament coming up on Sunday. And actually, it's coming up tomorrow through Sunday with the four rounds. I mean, the final round comes up on Sunday. That's the one everyone watches. But there will be four rounds of the tournament, and it should be a pretty riveting time, despite the fact that it'll be missing its premier player, Tiger Woods. And when we talk about a premier player, we're talking about a player who really brings the attention of everybody, casual or hardcore, to the TV set. Well, Tiger's not going to be there. I mean, his injury is pretty legit. It's very serious, so he won't be in effect at all. He's not in the tournament, period. And so a lot of questions have been raised about what kind of anticipation there would be for the Masters on a national scale without Tiger Woods involved. And to put it in perspective, this would be the first Masters without Tiger Woods since the mid-90s. He played as an amateur as well during, I think it was like 1995, maybe 1996. Then he had the Masters win in 1997. That was the first of his series of majors. That's a fascinating point. But without him in there, I mean, it's a very, very different story. I don't think it's a different story in terms of the leaderboard. I don't think he really would have made the final leaderboard anyway. Like, it wouldn't have been in the top 10 finish. Because he just poops out now and then the back halves of these tournaments. So that's not really the story. The story would have been just... The story would have been his attention in... I didn't think he was going to do it, but the chance of him doing it always captivates the fans. That's what I meant to say. Because you know that he's had the talent for years, and the acumen of Tiger Woods to make big shots still is inside of him. It's just his physical capabilities that are really holding him back at this point. And it's tougher with each year because he gets older and there's further demand to hit greens consistently with the driver. And that's just something he hasn't been doing lately. And it's tough. So, well, what do you do with that? Well, the Masters still is a course that winds up being very good to him. And as recently as 3 years ago, he was making a pretty big run in the Masters at Augusta. So without him in there now, it's up to the golf fans to get to know the rest of the field. And there are a lot of good players in this year's tournament. Big names like Rory McIlroy will be in effect. Adam Scott, who won it last year, will also be playing, trying to defend his Masters championship. Now, it's been a little while since we've had back-to-back Masters title winners. And I think it may have even been Tiger who was the Masters championship winner at that time. I'm not even sure of that. Because if you think about it, let's see, he won in 97, he won in 2000, he won in 2005. And I'm trying to think about, you know, Masters champions. The last golfer to win the Masters back-to-back years, you'd have to go back a little ways. But yeah, okay, you do look. It was Tiger, 2001 and 2002, And that would have been the last time we've had a defending Masters champion. It really was some, that really was quite a story. I'm trying to think about it. Yeah. He didn't win in 2000 because Vijay Singh did. And I think that might have been his first major, 1990. The year 2000. So that means it's been 14 years since we've had a repeat champion. But I think you have a really good shot at it this year. Assuming Adam Scott does his job and doesn't choke like he's been doing in all these tournaments lately. He has been so bad at the ends of these tournaments. I mean, he was up by 7. I think that was the Texas Open, and he blew the whole thing. He wasn't even on the lead. He wasn't even close to winning that thing 2 weeks ago. Just an awful. Just unbelievable. So it's hard to really trust him this year in that spot, especially since he already won the title last year in the Masters tournament. I mean, he's very good, but mentally, he leaves a lot to be desired. So, I mean, I'm down with Adam Scott, all right. I mean, I think Adam Scott's a decent golfer, a very good golfer, and I don't really support his lame putter, his cheap belly putter. It looks, you know, it's like it's kind of cheating because it's like it's just so much easier to use that thing to putt. And I'm glad they're going to do away with it eventually. And who knows if that's really going to affect his game. My dad thinks it's going to end his career because he really wouldn't be nearly as good without that thing. He claims that he didn't really start getting serious until he started using that putter. And well, without it, you know, in a year from now, who knows? So that's something I'll bring up with our friend Mike in North Jersey next week. So that reminds us, we have the Masters recap coming up on Monday night, 10 o'clock Eastern time. Our good friends Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut will be there with us to break down who won the Masters and the way they got there. And that will be the first of our series of golf podcasts of this year. And they're all great. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to Mike or John over the years, we've been doing the golf podcast since 2011. Go back through our archives, blogtalkradio.com/DaveInTheCity, and check it out, because you get some great golf analysis, and it's very entertaining, too. These guys are just, they can be really funny, and so it's just tremendous tremendous juice out of the two of them when we hear from them on the podcast. It'll be great. So we'll do it again Monday, April the 13th, I think it would be April the 14th here in the city. You won't want to miss it. And next Wednesday, so Wednesday the 16th of May, I mean the 16th of April, we will have the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs preview for you. Same time, 10 o'clock Eastern, but that will go 2 hours. And we'll segue into random questions. So a lot of fun there coming up. So this year, let's look at the field. My favorites in this one, and rather than just reciting all the tee times, as some Joker hosts are apt to do, I will tell you what I think about some of these guys, because I think you've got some pretty good participants in the mix. My eye is on a guy very young, like barely even 22, maybe 21, Jordan Spieth. And for Jordan Spieth, a guy who's really good at striking the ball, young guy, very enthusiastic. I mean, he's definitely new to the sport, and he's savoring every minute of it. This will be his first ever Masters tournament. So it's a bit of a stretch to expect him to win a tournament on his first try, but it's been done before. You go back to 1979 when Fuzzy Zeller won the Masters tournament on his first attempt. And so Jordan Spieth, just moving on up the ladder. I mean, you know, you barely heard of him a year ago. Now, he's really become quite a sensation. And it's going to be interesting because his enthusiasm for this event really mirrors that of many people. But one thing that I noticed that was really striking, and this comes from ESPN.com, he said that he was nervous being on the course and practicing at Augusta National. He was nervous in a practice round. And he's been saying, I don't really get nervous that much, but here I just felt it. And I said, wow, that is moving. I mean, you can see that the Masters really has a grip. Everybody dreams of doing the Masters. If you know, anyone who plays golf has dreams of being a part of that tournament and winning the championship. It really is the most prestigious golf tournament on the planet. With all due respect to the people at the Open Championship in the UK, I mean, Britain's got a nice thing going. It's the tradition and everything. But out here in Georgia, the Masters really is the end-all, be-all for golf. Because isn't that the first tournament you think about? You think about the Masters before you think about the others. U.S. Open's terrific as well, but the course rotates. It's a different course each year. And the PGA, same idea. And am I missing one? Well, we'd covered the Open already. They're all great for their own reasons, but the Masters is unique in that it takes place at the same course every year. And the course itself does not change much, which leads to a very interesting sidebar angle. And that would be the removal of the Eisenhower tree. That is something. Because, you know, for a course that never makes changes, leaving out the tree is big news. But the reason that they had to get rid of it was because, according to CBSSports.com, the tree itself was damaged in a winter ice storm. That's a really unfortunate thing, because the Eisenhower tree on hole number 17, you'll hear about this on the telecast, was always a thorn in the side of many golfers. Mark O'Meara is one of them. He said that he hit the tree so many times he felt like he put the tree in a weakened condition. Well, that's kind of sad. If you look at the tree, I'm going to look at the tree right now here on CBSSports.com. But the Eisenhower tree was as big a part of this event as anything else. I mean, Amen Corner and all that business. It's a big tree. I mean, I'm looking at it right now, very bushy. And it almost looks like it's kind of sticking out in the middle of the fairway. And so it's undoubtedly as iconic as anything else. The bridge at Amen Corner and all that stuff. I mean, it was a lot going on with that course. So that's going to be sad. I mean, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and I think Panther, a.k.a. Mike in North Jersey, alluded to this in a previous golf podcast. He could not even get the Masters to move the tree. They called him out of order. That's unbelievable. But finally, it looks like Mother Nature finally undid the tree. And there's not much you can do there. I mean, as even the stuffy Masters committee can't stop that. So it's no longer in playable condition. They will have to remove it. So that's a big story, because there's very, very little change in the Masters. Anytime there's any kind of movement at all, there's a lot that happens. I mean, will there ever be a female member of the committee? Probably not in the near future. Stuff like that. But nonetheless, it still maintains just an incredible tradition despite the loss of the tree. And anyone who thinks that's overrated, I mean, if you play golf, every aspect of a course really becomes its personality. And so you work with that. And if that is removed, especially a big tree like that, that's pretty dramatic. So I thought that was pretty big news. And that may lead to some better scores. I'm not really sure what the tangible effects of it will be, but we'll see. Now to the field itself. Again, we mentioned some pretty good pretty good guys in the tour. We already noted Adam Scott and Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, who's, again, just so wild all over the place. I can't even remember if he won a tournament, because there was one tournament, I think it was the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where he was dominating, and then he just suddenly blew it at the end. So that was very unfortunate for him, but he's still really, really talented. A little bit of Phil Mickelson in him, just making impossible shots, which can be counteracted by some dumb shots that he makes shortly thereafter. So favorites for the Masters also include Jason Day, who was struggling with some hand trouble, and I think John noted that to me. And so he'll be playing for the first time in 6 weeks. And not really sure what to expect there. A couple other guys to look out for. Let's see. Phil Mickelson, who had to pull out 2 weeks ago at the Texas Open, but then recovered enough to play his favorite, one of his favorite tournaments, the Houston Open, the week after. And he did all right. I mean, he didn't win, but he had a pretty good back end of that tournament. And he was making some nice shots and wasn't getting his putts down, but it looked all right there in that tournament. He was doing better. Matt Kuchar, who's always in contention at these events, really blew it in the Houston Open. He was winning the whole time. I mean, he was up, you know, for three rounds. And then on Sunday, the final round, he was doing par golf for like 15 holes and then tanked and lost it in a playoff to some guy I hadn't heard of before. Unbelievable choke job by Kuchar. But it does go to show you that he's been very, very close to winning a tournament this year. And the Masters certainly would be on the radar. He's been on the leaderboard, on the final leaderboard in these Masters tournaments before. So he's been able to make the cut, at least, in that situation. Dustin Johnson's a weird one. Last week's tournament at Houston, he had such a miserable start. It was like +8, and then he pulled out. Like, was he hurt? What happened there? It was just so bizarre. But I think he would still be a favorite to win this particular tournament at Augusta. We will see. Sergio Garcia is on a bit of a roll. He's been playing good golf. And Bubba Watson, you may remember, he had that great run at Riviera to win that tournament, get him on the board. That was actually his first. This is actually his first win in quite a while, if I remember that correctly. May have been his first tournament win in years, or at least a year. So Watson seems to be back on track, ready to go. So that's a good field. Henrik Stenson, not very impressive last week, but still a really talented golfer. And Justin Rose was really a contender for the Masters pretty recently. I think he may have even won it, but I'm going to check that. Bubba Watson won in 2011. Adam Scott won in 2013. I'm trying to figure out who won in 2012. And I think the answer to that question might have been Justin Rose. I think Justin Rose may have won the U.S. Open. That's why I'm so confused, because they tend to happen fairly recently. Yeah, you know what? That's right. Bubba Watson won in 2012. It was Charles Schwartzel who won in 2011. And I thought I'd never hear from that guy again, but actually I have. Charles Schwartzel can still be pretty good, and at least with a short game, he's got some pretty good stuff. So you never know. I mean, you've even had guys like Angel Cabrera come out of the woodwork, and Pato just go out and get a major. I think it might have been the PGA most recently. And so you're just never sure. Was it the Masters you won most recently? Yeah, look at that. So that was 2009 when he won the Masters those years ago. I think, so he won the, oh, okay, there we go. So he won the U.S. Open and the Masters. That's what happened. Yeah, I had that right. Now I have that down. So, you know, we've been talking about in the past how Tiger Woods would be leading a giant field, but the field wouldn't have much to speak about. Well, this year it's kind of different. I think the whole field looks pretty good. I mean, really a lot of competition. It's just that they haven't really reached the iconic status of guys like Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson and, you know, that's those kind of players. But there are some seriously good golfers out there today. McIlroy's one, Scott's another. And everybody else has got their niche. Like Kuchar's good with a short game. Sergio, he's kind of come back from the dead. I mean, he's pretty good now. Watson's got his great driver. Stenson, you know, is good all-around game. Justin Rose, always hanging around. And there's a lot to look forward to with a lot of these players. And Phil Mickelson can make some of the most exciting shots. Similar idea with McIlroy. So even though Mickelson's pretty old now, it's like past 40. It's like nearly 45. You don't count him out. And it was a similar idea with Tiger Woods when he was playing, but now with his injuries, it's hard to say. And this year, he won't be playing at all. So I think in terms of national interest, I think the Masters will take a hit. It'd be foolish not to think so. But in terms of the actual gameplay, you're still going to be in for a pretty good tournament. I mean, I think you'll have about five, maybe even eight or nine players really close to each other entering Sunday this year in the Masters. Because, again, like even though you have a big favorite in the Masters, like the biggest favorite as of right now to win the Masters. And remember, this is all based on public opinion and betting trends, too, so bear that in mind. But Adam Scott would be the guy. But Rory McIlroy is right behind him. So those are the two biggest favorites to win, and for good reason. I mean, they've both had really close... I mean, in terms of the FedEx Cup points, they're doing pretty well, but they haven't actually won an event yet. But they were right there. McIlroy was right there. He choked it. Adam Scott was right there, and he choked that, too. So them being that close, that means they're playing good golf somewhere along the line, and you can certainly see that. In fact, I think McIlroy might have been the one last week who had a really good recovery after a bad start. Because I remember there was he had like -6 for one round, and just to get back into competition. That's a big story because after that round in Florida, I mean, you just thought he lost it, but it looks like he might be all right. And so he's always got the talent. It's just a matter of whether he can put it together for four rounds. I mean, sometimes he's all over the map. He just makes some of the dumbest moves. So you can't say. And that's why it's always a little frustrating to follow a guy like that. But yeah, I think it was McIlroy indeed. Like, he had a -7 on the fourth round. -7. He shot 7 under in the fourth round at Houston, didn't win, but he finished -8. I mean, that's a pretty impressive finish, all things considered. Another guy that a couple other guys you might want to look at: Ryan Palmer and Jimmy Walker, fairly young guys. I think it may have been Palmer who won. I'm trying to think what he won, but he won one of these tournaments. I am trying to figure out what tournament he won. He didn't win a tournament. I'm sorry. What may have happened, he was close in the Honda Classic. He was tied for second. And I think that's all she wrote. And he was getting there when the Houston Open as well. And who was that guy that was just shooting all over the course? And I just like, how is this guy winning for most of the tournament? This guy from Australia, maybe it's not Palmer, but there's another guy. The Texas Open. I mean, this guy was just shooting the ball everywhere. Was it Patrick Reed? I don't think it was Patrick Reed. I'll look it up anyway. He's all over the place. Maybe that is him. Because if he's the guy, because he's from Australia. No, not Patrick Reed. I'm just trying to figure out who that guy was, because that guy was nuts. I mean, that guy was that guy was ridiculous. It was like, I don't know. I'm not gonna figure it out. It's just too far in the past now. It's like Bowditch. That's right. It was Bowditch. Oh gosh, that guy. Oh gosh, and he was always hitting the ball way into the rough, like in the reeds. This might have been the Texas Open. And then somehow he'd get out of it. Like, he'd miss a cactus by like an inch. And he'd somehow get it like right on the green. Like, how does this guy continue to get away with it? Well, he didn't for long. It finally caught up to him. But that guy for a long time was really pulling some of these shots out of his butt. And it was just unbelievable. I couldn't get over that. But that's one guy I think you do not have to worry about. Bowditch. I don't even know if he's in this thing. I really don't think he's good. Oh, did he win the Texas Open? Oh, he did. He did. Well, that guy was ridiculous. I don't know what happened there. I just like, you know, and that's in, you know, you look at, I'm looking at actually his finishes in these other Opens. Like, everything else, he has been cut, 37th, 124th last week, 69, 75, 48, 51, cut. And then the Puerto Rico Open, I think that's a different tour, he was tied for 37th. So, yeah, I don't even think Stephen Bowditch is even going to be in the Masters. I would be really surprised if he was. I mean, that's not that, well, he, I guess he is going to be in there. I go, well, how do you know? Potich, what a joke. I mean, he's not going to even be in the, he's going to be, look, if he makes the cut, if Potich makes the cut, if he makes the cut, I would be really surprised. I mean, that guy is so inconsistent. It just, it's, it can be, if you're a fan of his, it must be frustrating. I'll have to make sure he's even on the roster. I mean, I guess that's, that was actually significant, the fact that he won that Texas Open, despite all the wild shooting that he did. Because the Masters, as you know, the term Masters means that only guys who have won a PGA tournament could enter. Although it's not officially sanctioned or run by the PGA, it's a funny story. But Bodich, you know, got it done. So because of that, you know, by definition, you're in. That's what Masters is. Like that's why it's called the Masters, because all the guys who have won tournaments in their past are part of that story. So that's a really interesting story. We have 3 minutes left. Let's round out the hour with our call from 973 area code. Let's get him on the show. Welcome to the program. What can I do for you tonight? Who am I speaking to?
I come to take what you believe in further than you ever could.
That's good. That is good.
I will look at you, and you will realize then that I have come to do no one no harm. I must ask you now. Do you no longer want to walk or step in darkness?
Oh, man.
In this normal world, basically, none of us can live forever. I will look at you, and you will realize this. I can even afford to do no one no harm.
Oh, baby. Boy, this is good.
You don't deserve to breathe the same air that I and Hulk Hogan do. That's why I breathe air. You have lived for the last 5 WrestleManias for this one belief. Hulk Hogan, do you want your ideas, your beliefs, forever? In this normal world, basically, none of us can live forever.
Well,
the darkness I speak of is nothing but fear. Hulk Hogan, do you no longer want to walk or step into that darkness? Hulk Hogan, that is why the warriors have come. Hulk Hogan,
wow.
I will look at you, and you will realize then that I have come to do no one no harm.
This is so good. Is he done? I think.
Back in turn! Back to the fight! Back to the sleep jail! Everyone's looking. Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah!
What the hell is this? I think we're going to have to cut you.
People like you don't make the culture the way it is.
It's like I'm talking to a computer here. It's just, well, I don't know what that was. Oh my gosh, I love this. Oh, that is good. That is good. I'm going to stop it right there. That is a very... It's still going. I am out of time. That was good. Well, I don't know who that was, but a fitting tribute to the fallen Ultimate Warrior. Died yesterday at the age of... let me see. The age of 53, I believe. Ultimate Warrior, no longer with us on this planet. And what a shame that is. He had made peace with the WWE, Sports Entertainment. Had the Hall of Fame speech over the weekend as a lead up to WrestleMania 31. And just like that, you know, 2 days later, he just goes to the Ultimate. Dies at 54. Ultimate Wrestling Ring in the Sky. Aged 54 at the time of his death. Officially, Ultimate Warrior. Rest in peace. That's it for hour number one. We have Kevin on the Cape here for hour number two coming up in just a moment. We'll take our top of hour ID, get back into it. Right after this, Dave in the City, Locks of the Week Radio. It's 8:01.
Serving the nation at blogtalkradio.com. This is Locks of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
And it comes time, we know how Lincoln dies, you know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they're showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic, chanting USA.
Actually, this Bull Dave is a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
You know what? Puts the WGCs in a Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major prank. So chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just M.A., and
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot off her, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
All right, here we go. We're hour number two on our podcast, and we have the return of a very special friend of ours back after a week off. And we have ourselves a pretty nice spring underway here in California. Hopefully that's the same for the rest of you guys in the country. It's not really that warm for most of America yet, but it's getting there. At least it's not snowing, it's not icy. So we will see where you all stand across America. And now let's stand across. Does that make sense? Let's stand now because we got some pretty good excitement coming up from our friend Kevin on the Cape on America's favorite moment in sports talk podcasting.
To the dance. It's time for random questions. Good stuff. In the city with Kevin on the Cape.
And here he is back with us after a week away. Our friend Kevin on the Cape. What's going on, Kevin?
50 degrees, Dave.
Whoa.
Spring has sprung.
I love it.
2 days in a row.
I love it. You can move out there. It's good. Great news.
Yeah. Unbelievable. No snow. There's birds chirping and all that kind of crap.
Oh,
great.
I love it. That's really good stuff. So, well, great to have you back, Junkman. I know you were not in the best of conditions a week ago. So.
No. Yeah.
Tell us a little more about the journey to this week's podcast.
I was poisoned.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, poisoned. You know, everyone. You know, there's people who have to get you everywhere you turn, Dave. You got to be careful.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I survived. I don't really want to go into too much detail because, you know, the legal ramifications I'm currently pursuing against the poison eaters. Needless to say, we're back. We're ready to go.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm sorry about that, man. That definitely pursue legal action. You would be surprised. Even the most mundane things could get you some money back in a legal settlement. I'll tell you more about that later if we have the time. But just glad to have you with us. I mean, that's frightening. When you're tampered with, you know, in terms of health, that's always dangerous. So I hope you win. Whatever this legal settlement is, I hope you win.
We can't go too crazy, but as many of our listeners know, I am severely allergic to a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
and I was given some of those things, and resulted in sickness for a week, 10 days, and some self-medicating EpiPen, so it wasn't really like the... I kind of thought of it when I woke up that one morning when it was really bad, the one where I sent you that message afterwards where I woke up with my EpiPen in my hand, you know, my pants down my ankles. I'm like, you know, this probably doesn't look like how Philip Seymour Hoffman died, but sort of like the less cool version of the rock star actor overdose.
Ugh.
But I survived it, so that's
no, that's the most important part. I mean, it would have been really tough to explain that next week if you had not survived it. So, I mean, I would have been crushed in many ways, crestfallen, if you will. I'm just glad.
It really wouldn't be nearly as cool. Like, you know, Kurt Cobain shot himself up and then shot his face off, you know. And then you tell the story about me, and I'm not comparing myself to that man, obviously, but then you compare yourself to me, you're like, oh, the neighbor knocked the door down and he was in his boxers with an allergy pen in his hand and, like, a bottle of seltzer. Like, well,
seltzer
really
in your pants?
Out, like, with a bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really went out with a bang, you know.
Yeah.
His place was actually clean and organized, and we found his effects in order. It wasn't a complete mess, you know. He had seltzer and, you know, chicken and broccoli on the plate. No heroin anywhere, no booze anywhere. You know. It'd be awful. We can't go out with a blaze of glory like some of the rock stars out there.
Junkman, I figured if you were going to go, you'd have to go in style. If it did come to that, at least you could say, hey, man,
right.
Look, I mean, obviously, like you said, it's not as spectacular as some of these other cases, but it's eventful, certainly. Anyway, well, here we are. Like you said, things are warming up around here. So you've got your, you know, spring winter. Since you said that there's not a real spring, it's like you have like a couple days of it, so this must be it. Like, this is probably the best weather of the year then, and you'll have it for what, like a...
We actually had this is today. Yesterday actually was the warmest day we've had since, I think, November 9th, someone told me, and it was in the newspaper.
Wow.
So it's been a rough winter, but
yeah.
This isn't spring weekend yet. We're hoping for a nice... 65 degree day. Maybe.
Yeah, you know, the six.
Eastern,
when you see that six in front of the number, in the front of the number, that's when you really start to get excited. Start throw some beach parties at that point, no?
Oh yeah, clam bake on the beach.
Oh.
Easily. The first, you're exactly right. The first 60 day, we're done. We're playing bocce ball in the sand.
What's the difference between bocce? I think I played bocce briefly. What is the difference between bocce and croquet? Is this like just basically croquet without the mallet?
Oh, it's completely different.
It's totally different. Okay.
Yeah, bocce ball is. It's just you two teams, one on either side. You throw a tiny little ball at the end of the side, and you're throwing the bigger balls, and you got to get close, and you get points for as close as croquet is. You set up little gates, I guess is the best way to put it, little upside-down U-shaped things. You stick them in the ground, and you've got to go in order and hit your balls through them. So it's, I think croquet is actually a lot more difficult. Bocce ball, you can... croquet, you've put it this way, croquet, you've got two hands on the mallet, I think is what they call it,
right,
that you hit the ball with. So you really can't drink where with bocce ball, you only just throw the ball every, few minutes. So you can drink your wine or your booze, whatever you prefer.
For
bocce
sure.
ball is a much better drinking game. It's much better beach game. Think about trying to hit a mallet with a ball in the sand. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I think I vaguely remember some of this about bocce, because I think I may have played bocce then. It must have been bocce, because I don't remember any mallets. So I played with some friends of mine on the front and in the backyard, and that was basically it. Like, just, you throw the ball, then you throw the ball, and see if you can throw the ball better than I can throw the ball. It's kind of like that. You're just kind of landing it somewhere, something like that. I forget. So
it's like the chubby, lazy guy summer version of curling, maybe, the target, and I think if you're the closest you get 3 points, and if you get second closest, you're it's just, I don't think anyone really knows the point structure. They just kind of drink and have fun, and it's over when the sun goes down and you've got to go back home.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. That's not bad.
Oh, yeah, it's a terrific game. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's
pretty... Think about all the beaches you got out there. You should start a little something out there. And down the beach with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little suntan.
Yeah.
Have a blast.
I like it. Yeah, we play football on the beach here in California. And it's in Santa Monica. It's a big thing. But if we were to, mix it up and throw in some bocce, I think it'd be a hit. The colorful balls really play into it too. So that's a nice idea. Yeah, it is nice. So I think that's pretty good. So Junkman, you're on to something very nice. We shall see if the weather does improve that much to where you can really do stuff like that. I mean, that's pretty good. And so things picking up at your fish market, I imagine must be pretty nice now.
That's the same, Dave. That's the same. But once the weather gets nice and you're able to do that kind of stuff, I don't get to go outside very often.
Oh, it's true. You're too busy, right? Too much demand.
Yeah, we're getting close.
I see. Yeah. Well, as that stuff tends to happen, so we'll see how it goes. Okay, well, just to restate, it's good to have you here again. Nice to have you with us. I don't know if you've things have been changing. I know that with the NCAA tournament, we had really wild finishes here. A 7 seed meeting an 8 seed for the title. That just doesn't happen. I think it's the first time you've even seen anything like that, where two below, two like 7 and greater seeds met and for the championship. But I think you look back, and I don't think either of those two teams really were what their seed said they were. Kentucky definitely wasn't. They had too much. You realize that they had how much talent they have now. They just had a lot. And so a similar idea with UConn. I mean, they got really hot, but they had always played good defense most of the year. And they were just giving some teams fits. I mean, their matchup with Florida was pretty consistent with their regular season matchup. So probably at the end of the day, it was not that huge, the biggest surprise as it seemed, that they beat Florida the way they did. So pretty amazing run. I don't know. What's the feeling over there? I don't know. Does Massachusetts connect at all with UConn? What do you think?
No, not at all. We don't like UConn.
Okay. So it's not really – no real relation. Okay.
We really don't like it at all.
I dig.
Connecticut's sort of like it, but yeah, it's all right.
It's like New York Junior, eh? That's been my impression of it. Kind of like next to New York, so it's kind of a New York-y kind of thing. But
yeah, it's sort of like the that annoying guy in the bar who gets in between you and the guy you're ready to go at it. So basically, Connecticut's just in the way of New York and Boston. Just sort of like trying to work yourself around it. And you're like, listen, let's just go at it and have a little discussion, a little argument, maybe push each other around a little bit. But this annoying little twerp is in the way, and that's Connecticut.
Well, I suppose that's one way to put it. I kind of like Connecticut, but interestingly, I've never actually been there, so I have no real comment on it yet. But, you know, there's a chance that could be changing, Mr. Junkman. I will get into that next week on our podcast. I will go into more detail about that. But let me just put a quick question to you. We mentioned that you are, in terms of driving, you're like a good, how many miles from Boston? Like 100? Maybe like 150? Like, is it more than that? Is it less than that?
No. To Boston is probably 100 and, not more than 100, but definitely less than 150, but probably 100. I'd say 100, 110.
110? That's not that much. So let me ask you a question.
No, it's two hours tops.
2 hours tops. Okay, cool. And I know that you've partaken in Red Sox games from time to time. Am I right?
I have, absolutely. Not for a few years, but yeah, mm-hmm. I have.
So let us say on a theoretical level that I had tickets to a Red Sox game, and for some reason, somehow I was in the building. And I said, all right, Junkman, let's say, you know, I don't know, it's not right away, but during the summer at some point. Let's just say, let me see if this pans out. Well, maybe it doesn't. But let us say, just for the sake of argument, that I happen to be around for a game in sometime in the near future. And I'm seeing it now, and it's probably not going to happen. But let's say I was, like in let's say I just somehow I showed up, and the Red Sox were at Fenway, and I was just, I was there. I was in town for whatever reason, I was there. Would you, Junkman, would you be one to partake in meeting me to see the Red Sox play a game? Like, against anybody, like, you know, Cleveland or Detroit or whoever. How would that grab you, Mr. Junkman? Would you want to, would that be?
It would interest me a great deal. The opponent wouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
In the least. But, you know, I mean, I got a pretty solid routine these last few years. So if you're telling me you had a Red Sox game in June, I'd be there within a day's notice. No problem.
Oh, okay,
if you told
cool.
me you were at a Red Sox game in August, if it's a weekday, it's 50-50. If it's on the weekend, I got no shot. I got to be at work.
Oh, I got you, yeah. So what? I know you technically don't have any days off. Like, are night games better for you than day games?
No. Night games are always is better because, you know, Dave, I'm a fair-skinned boy. I really don't like to go outside during the day in the sun.
All right, I got you there. That makes sense. No, that totally makes sense. I can dig that, yeah. I can totally dig that. So makes total sense. So in theory, you could make it to one of these games. I'm just trying to figure out, like, I don't want to do anything where you'd have to be forced to take extra time off or anything. So that's what I was thinking, just on a theoretical level, like, what would your schedule be like on a you know, let's say the middle of June, like a Monday night game or a Tuesday night game? You know, what?
Oh, I'd say that's, you're bordering on 85% to 90%.
Ooh, I like this, Junkman. I like it.
A weekday in June is probably the best chance you got for, especially early mid-June, before schools get out and we get too crazy.
Oh, this is good. This is good. Dude, I like this. Okay, so, I'll tell you, I'm gonna earmark that, Mr. Junkman. I am, because I've got a feeling I might be heading out to the East Coast in June at some point. I will provide the specific dates in next week. The reason I can't do it now, I could do it privately, but I want to make sure I let everyone know, like my parents, meaning my family. I want to make sure that they know first before anyone else knows specifically what the plans are. But basically, I'll be there, you know, in the middle of June. I think I'll give you the tentatives. You know, Thursday.
You want your family to know?
Well,
I don't understand.
That's just a thing of courtesy I do. Like, I just, like, you know.
Are you doing something strange you need to know?
No. None of that. I don't want to get them, you know. I plan this stuff out, and I already throw it all out on the table, and then I don't want anyone to be left in the dark. Certainly not anyone that I love very, very, very much. So I should let them know, you know, before I embark on all this stuff. But basically, it's going to happen around mid-June. That's the idea. So I have credit card points that will be applied to a good portion of this trip, which means I won't be paying that much to get out there. Way less than I did last time. I'll tell you that. I don't even know why I put up with all the expenses I used last time to get out east. It was like, how did I end up paying that much last time? I was like, that was dumb. Because I was thinking, like, remember we were talking about that 2 years ago, like, about the hotels in Manhattan, just how outrageously priced they are?
Right, yeah.
Oh, gosh, I'm not doing that again. Fortunately, I found one in the aforementioned big, you know, Little Brother, Connecticut that I had my eye on, and I think that's going to be the play. It's going to end up being pretty nice.
What town is this?
Stamford.
Oh, Stamford. Good choice.
Thank you.
Excellent
wow.
choice. A lot of good people.
Yeah? Oh, I like that. You know, our friend.
A lot of fun restaurants. You know, you're not going to be, if you wanted to go to Manhattan, you can get on the train, which I know you like public transportation. Nice little quick train shot, but Stamford's a good place. Highly recommended. Although it's not going to be cheap, Dave. I mean, I don't know what you're used to. Stamford is a growing kind of maybe pretty popular place now. That's where my sister used to live. I used to work in Stamford, so I could show you around a little bit.
Hey, that's right. Oh, would you do that? Would you make the commute all the way to Stamford at some point? In a theoretical.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Really? You know what? That's.
Oh yeah, especially with some notice, I could pull that off in June.
Let me get back to you on that, because I'm going to have an open date in there, because I'm actually going to be there a fairly long time, more than I thought I would. So I, you know, it should be like a Thursday. It should be like Thursday. Friday is not open, but Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday are open, like wide open. So like let's make that work. That would be, if you know, and especially if you're so familiar with Stamford, that'd be great. I mean, it's an easy train ride once you get to a train station.
Friday's not open. Friday's not open. You got a little like date going there.
I'm meeting. Well, Friday. It's because we have like a Yankees game in effect on Friday. If you want to partake in that, you should come too. Because that train will make it to Manhattan. It's kind of interesting. We are our friend Captain and guy named, you know, Lewin Hoboken, aka Utter Disaster, invited me to go see the Yankee game on Friday. So that's the reason I didn't use Friday. Although the morning would
That's
be
terrific.
Open. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you go all the way to New York, but that is open if you want to come. You know how much the board would just flip if you came. They would love it. You wouldn't even know.
But I'll say this. I would love to spend a night out with all you guys, and I would certainly cherish a night to drink with the captain, but in no way, shape, or form am I going to a Yankee game with that completely crazy person.
You know, if you heard the first part of the show, that would only cement that point of view. He was really livid over the game tonight. So,
I would go out. I would go out with you guys on a Yankee night off and buy him drinks all night. But to be next to him during a Yankee game, I couldn't do it. And I say that with the most possible respect and admiration for that man and his fanhood or fandom, whatever you want to call it, but I couldn't do that.
And that's fully understood, my friend. It really is. But the concept of you making it to Stamford, let's just say it was a Thursday night, would that be within your means to do? Because
absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, of course.
This is good. Thursday night. I wouldn't know the place because I'm not familiar enough with Stamford. Although I know they have some, they have a Morton's, they have some other chain restaurants, but I'm sure they have some real, like, regular bars too. Junkman, we got to make this happen. If that's a reasonable commute for you on a Thursday night, and somehow you can make that work, what are your normal hours at the fish market anyway? Like, are you more of a daytime worker or a nighttime?
Don't worry about that. No, it's not a reasonable commute, Dave. I'd have to take time off. It's not like something I could drive to after work.
Okay. Just making sure. Okay, but it is feasible, and I think that's very. That makes me
it's
very
up. It's a reasonable. It's better to you could call it a road trip rather than a commute.
Okay.
for that kind of crowd, I mean, we could get Captain up to Stanford maybe on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. He can tell stories, and then you guys can go to the game tomorrow on the next day, and I'll find something to do Friday night.
That's a winner. That is a winner. That is a serious winner. I like this a lot. I do like this junk, man. This is really good. I like it. I'm really, really pumped up. This is a dream I've had forever, meeting you in person. And if we can make that happen, we will make it happen, my friend. Yeah. Get some other Connecticut guys to come on down. And
yeah.
This is good.
There's plenty. It might explode beyond what you even have imagined, because there's a lot of guys. Stanford, Dave, is basically, you know, Westchester County, which is where I grew up and where many of the guys who listen to our show and who are on that board live. And Stanford is basically 20 minutes, 30 minutes from Westchester County.
Oh, my gosh.
So
you are right.
You might put together something a lot larger than you can imagine, like a Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could pull off easily renting a room at a bar, and you'd have 20 guys show up, I bet.
Dude, this is good. This is so good. I am so happy right now. This is amazing. I cannot wait to make some arrangements here.
Obviously, we're going to have to get to some people with a little heavier pockets than us involved if we're going to rent that room in a bar.
Yeah, fair enough. But
I'm sure we could work.
It's always possible that we could get a bar that's not that crowded to start with, and then maybe we could take up a table and just go from there, you know. And it depends on what I can find. I mean, again, like I said, I don't know enough about the area to really know. But you know who does? My friend Yachts knows the area very well because he lived there for a couple years. Now he lives in Greenwich, which is like next door, so it's practically the same area.
I think it's about four exits, I think, on highway there.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Yes.
You would know, obviously. I think Greenwich is exit 3 and Stanford 7, so it's not that far.
I don't know why Yachts is typing everything in caps tonight, but I love it. I love the enthusiasm. He says, just go to Bobby V's on Thursday
angry.
Night. That's a good call.
He's probably angry at me for some reason.
Bobby V's. Bobby Valentine's restaurant. I'll look that up. That's a great idea.
I worked right down the street from there, so I know what he's talking about.
Nice. So you know where that is, too. Okay. Well, I think got something here.
I spent many, many, many nights in there.
Okay. Well, let's just say that... Come again? What was that?
Go ahead.
No, all I was going to say was that turn. Let's just tentatively set that as, let's say, June the 19th. June the 19th. And I will send a PM to that effect and see if we can get some traction on it. And if you know, I'm the itinerary, I think, you know, barring some unforeseen circumstances, should be set about that time. I think we're looking pretty good. So it's like June 19th. Is that a Thursday? I think that's a Thursday, right? Yeah, so June 19th in the evening. I don't know what time, but you know, after 6 we will congregate. I like this so much. This is good. This is really, really good.
This might break the board.
It might break the board. And I tell you what, I think, you know, because I really, you know, last time I went to the New York area, remember, if you remember, we did the New Jersey thing. Like, we were, the holy thing was New Jersey. All the New Jersey guys came. And this time around, we can get the Connecticut guys in the mix and the Westchester County guys in the mix. So that includes our friend Rollins.
Right.
And that.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be really, really good. Boy, wow, what if? This is really, really good. This is really, boy, we've really hit on something.
There's way more. Even some of the, I know they're, even some of the newer guys, I've noticed, you know, in some of their locations mm-hmm. are Westchester County. Not, you know, I say new, but they've probably been on that place for 6 or 8 months, but still. You never know, Dave. I'm telling you, you throw that invite out there, you might. It could be a pretty cool time.
I like this. You know what I think? You know, I got word from our friend Yachts that Rollins lives in Stanford. Now that blows my mind.
Wow.
That's a layup then for him. He can walk to the place. This is going to be fantastic. Oh, this is good.
Wow, I did not know that he was there. That's tremendous.
Yeah, I know he moved. I didn't realize he moved to Stanford. That is a big move. That Stanford's awesome. That's a great moving choice. Yeah. Wow. Maybe I can visit his sandwich shop. Whoa. Unless the sandwich shop moved too. I'm not sure what happened there. But
we can ask him that. We can ask him that that night. We don't have to worry about his business.
Yeah, let's not concern ourselves with that part. Yeah, I like that. Okay. So, for those of you listening, if you want to join us, this is going to be ridiculous, but if you're listening out there, the hundreds and hundreds or tens of you that are listening, yes, June 19th, it's not official, but it's pretty close, Bobby V's restaurant in Stamford, Connecticut. Let's see if we can get that together. We won't try to do a podcast. I think we can do more than that. I mean, I think we'll just chill, have some fun. So if you want to be there, be there. We'll be there. We will be there.
Yeah, I mean, we might take videos or pictures and stuff for future reference, but we can't do a podcast and focus on all the other stuff that's going on.
I love it.
You know, watching yachts or snap people packs and stuff, and we can't be able to,
Holy mackerel, this is so good. I can't even get over how good this is. My skin is tingling with how good this is. This is really good. This is just good, period. This is, holy smokes, this is good. Okay, well, thank you very much for your consideration, Mr. Junkman. This talk was quite productive.
You're welcome.
And I cannot wait. I hope, I really do, I have my fingers crossed and everything, that I'll get to see you in person sometime very soon in the near future, this year. And that just makes my whole year, honestly. This is fantastic. I'm elated, man. This is really good. I can't wait. I guess that's all I have now. I can't wait, buddy. This is going to be really a lot of fun. So we'll see how it goes. Should be good. Whew. Oh man, hot weather, an impending meeting. This is all very good news. Let's get to the random questions then tonight, Mr. Junkman.
Right.
As we ponder Excellent. Our travel plans, here we go. Wow, this is... All right, so we'll go to the random questions with Kevin on the Cape. And if in case you missed it, I am Dave Medina. Honing down the plans for the summer, which could just be... really one of the best summers of my lifetime. All right.
That's a lot of fun, Dave.
That's good stuff. I don't know why Quickies can't make the chat tonight, because he would be ready to go with all sorts of questions. So let me ask you a question. All right. Is Frank Pepe's pizzeria in New Haven worth all the hype? Is that just a lot of marketing babble? Is it really that great? What is... the story with Frank Pepe's.
I'm sure that it's worth the hype. I think that's one of those places that is... it's probably as popular as it is because of its consistency more than anything else. So when people tell you about it or, someone's dad tells you about it, you go there and it's nothing fancy, but it's still the same quality and the same kind of crowd that everyone has experienced in the past. So, and it's hard in that restaurant business to be that consistent. So I think it's probably worth the hype. It's probably not going to completely blow your brains out, but I think it's not going to disappoint you either, which is pretty impressive, I think, for how long that they've done what they've done.
Now, I understand they have some pretty long lines. This reminds me a little of Pink's and like In-N-Out out here in California. Very popular. Shake Shack in New York is a similar idea. Just really popular. A lot of demand. And I was wondering, I wonder if the prices are good there. I mean, I don't know if you can remember them, but...
Yeah. That's the other thing, too. Like, I always think about when it comes to those places that get talked up and they're always in the reviews and the write-ups. I understand they're good, but to
be honest with you, at least this is my own thought, my own personality, I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to stand on a line around the corner for anything, whether it's you tell me it's the best pizza, the best sushi, the best whatever. I mean, I'm hungry. I have to eat. I'm not going to stand on a line just to go to a place that Frank Sinatra went to. I'll go down the corner and eat a mediocre slice of pizza because I can get it in 5 minutes. That's just the way I am.
Right. I think you got to strike that balance. Like, it was the effort you put into going to a place, does it make it worth it? I mean, if you have to put too much effort in it, then what's the use? You know, I understand that completely. So sometimes you can find something that's, you know, almost as good, but way more convenient and comfortable. And I think that's important because, you know, sometimes you go through so much just to get a bite. And, you know, at some point you realize, you know, this is just food, man. I'm just like, we're not going after scholarships. It's just a stinking meal. What's the point? Something's got to give. So I understand that fully. We go through this, and pretty much every big city's got that place where it's just, you know, demand is just through the roof, just unbelievable, just incredible. So we'll see. Oh, I don't know why this reminded me of this, but David Letterman announced his retirement. I think it was last week, which, to me, it's sort of like, yeah, it's probably about time. Like, a lot of times you're like, oh, man, he's going. But, like, him, I feel like he's an overdue book. Like, he's been past his prime for a long time already. So, and it's like, yeah, it's about time. Like, he's really kind of he's kind of played out everything he could do. So, I'm more relieved than saddened by the news of Letterman finally calling it quits in a year when his contract runs out. So, your thoughts, if any?
My first thought, and my only real thought on the subject, was I saw, like, the headline on the whatever website I went to, Letterman announced retirement, so I click on the link to read the story, and he says, I'm retiring sometime in 2015. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So why don't you tell me when you're, you know, like a week before, and maybe I'll check the clips from your last show, but you're going to retire sometime late next year? That sounds kind of ridiculous. Like, who? I don't know who does that. I mean,
oh, I know one guy.
Yankees, you don't,
yeah, oh, you just mentioned it. You mentioned it. Yeah, that guy.
Really, you don't really do that to just, you know, get all the self-congratulations and
right.
That kind of stuff. So it seems a little odd to me.
You nailed it.
Maybe it's a New York thing.
It may
we
be.
Don't understand it. Maybe it's a thing.
Yeah, that's what they want. You know, since Mariano did it, now everybody wants to do the whole victory parade and victory tour. You know, it's a little bit of a contradiction because Derek Jeter, when he did that announcement, he had a press conference on it. This was a few months ago about his impending retirement. He's not retiring. He's just having a few words about it. And he would go on like, this isn't about me. This isn't about B. I don't want to bring attention to myself. Well, then why'd you announce it a whole year in advance if you didn't want to bring attention to yourself? You knew you totally did it to bring attention to yourself. And, you know, you could give him the benefit of the doubt and say, well, he wanted fans to know when his last game was. You could do that like a month before, or maybe, like you said, a week before, like, this will be my last game. And then people have a chance to go out and see him do his last game. But a whole year before? What else is it if it's not a ploy to bring attention to yourself? I mean,
yeah. If athletes and people on television, I mean, I'm not going to break any ground by saying this. They're all egomaniacs. So whether they want you to believe it or not, they that's what they live for. They live for the attention. So they know that when they're done playing or they're done being on television, they're not going to get that attention anymore, so you might as well milk it for everything it's worth. And
right.
And that last...
See, Favre sort...
The guys that you really are impressed with are the guys that all of a sudden just call it quits, and you know, somebody like Barry Sanders or, you know, just kind of say, I've had enough, and there's no big ceremony, and there's... They just sort of go away and you're kind of just left with what they did on the field.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, how that whole thing you know, can happen. So That's absolutely right. So let's see about our next random question tonight, Mr. Jackman. That's just a final comment. I mean, I think Favre, previous to this whole year-long farewell tour thing, a swan song season, whatever. Previous to this, I remember Favre would always play the what-if game, like, oh, maybe I'll retire, maybe I won't, maybe I will, maybe I won't, and then he makes a decision, like, okay, I'm going to play next year. And then finally, he just got the snot kicked out of him the final season. So he was so badly hurt that he had no choice but to retire at the end. So it was like, Favre almost did that. But he I think if he had known about this idea, he would have done it himself. Like, if, you know, this is kind of a...
Right. Oh, totally. You nailed that. If he had known about this MA, as Tom would say it, he would have done that a long time ago.
No.
The best part about the bar thing, too, was, like, I always thought was how he kept going back and forth with the Packers, and then the Packers were just like, you know what, you're retired, you're done, we've got this other guy.
Oh, that was brilliant. It really was. And, you know, the ones who were on the ball with this, like, the longtime Packer fans were like, yeah, I think they did the right thing. They were done. It was all the Favre fans. Because there were Favre fans. It's the same thing with the Lakers. I have the Kobe fans and the Laker fans. Well, the Favre fans were like, oh, but it's the outrage. You're like, oh, how could the Packers do this to him? And it's like, the Packers gave him enough rope. I mean, they had enough, like you said. I mean, just like, we have to move on. We're never going to advance as a team if we keep waiting on him all the time. So it was the right move. It's obvious that it worked out. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best throwers in the NFL, perhaps the best. And Favre managed to do all right, getting a couple of seasons with other teams, and worked out for both sides. So you're right. I think that was the best way to go.
Right, and you would think that, you know, other organizations, whatever sport it was, would look at that and say, wow, they did the right thing, but so many people don't do that.
They don't. You get nervous.
Imagine if Yankees had, you know, like Xander Bogaerts or something at Triple A, and who was hitting the snot out of the ball, and they're like, why are you not bringing this guy up? And, well, we've got this old guy who just keeps hanging around.
Very true. Oh, Bogaerts, yeah. Bogaerts is now on the Red Sox, but you were saying, like, if he was a Yankee in their system, yeah.
Right, I'm not saying him, but if they had someone like that, like, who was ready to go,
right,
and they're just keeping him in Triple A because the old guy won't hang up.
That's a tough spot. You don't want to be in that situation, because then you're really, your law of diminishing returns gets pretty gross after a while. So you have to know when to say goodbye at the right time. And sometimes you don't want to get too wrapped up in, oh, letting him finish his career as an XYZ player. You're not going to remember that anyway, like, at the end of the year. Like, you know, when Brett Favre gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, Packer fans are going to remember him very fondly, and he played the majority of his career there. People aren't going to remember that he was with the Jets for a year and with Minnesota for a year and all that. Packer fans will remember him as a Packer. So it's not really that big a deal at the end of the, you know, long term. So I think people get that little bit overworked about, oh, you got to play the whole career in one team. And it's just like, Shaq left the Lakers pretty acrimoniously when he went to Miami. And then he was on like 18 other teams. He finally retired when he couldn't get any elevation on his jump shot anymore. And Laker fans, we're like, he won 3 titles for us. So it's like, we're like, man, he was good. He retired his number and everything's great. So it all balances out. That's the point. Yeah. Did Mattingly ever play for another team? No, right? Don Mattingly? He played.
No.
And then he got too hurt. And then he just retired, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's why I remember it, too. Anyway. Is there been anybody on the Mets that had that kind of situation? I'm trying to think. Piazza? No, maybe. I'm not sure.
No, he retired as a Met.
He did retire as a Met, okay. Yeah, he kind of, like, you know, we were just talking about it. Like, you know, sometimes your skills deteriorate so much, it's just like, it pretty much ends it. So there's really no other team.
Let's not bring the Mets into this. I mean,
I'll stop. I'm sorry. Okay, next question.
Yeah. You don't have to go any further. You don't have to go any further than the team that traded Tom Seaver. You know,
that's a good point.
Like 10 years before he was done. Like, come on.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad. Big part of the Big Red Machine down the line too. Yeah, that was bad. That was bad. Okay, here we go. Next question. This comes from John in Georgia. He asks,
Nice.
What is the best present you have received?
The best present?
No. Like gift or present, a birthday present or whatever.
The best present I've ever received was on my birthday. Oh, man, it's got to be 10 years ago. I got a box of cigars, which, you know, that's pretty cool. But I also got by the same person that same night a first edition John Steinbeck of The Wayward Bus, which is a really cool book. Not one of his more famous books. But by the same person gave me two packages. One was that book and one was the box of cigars. That was a pretty cool gift. It showed some thought, some research, kind of maybe find the book. I mean, you can go to any place in the corner and buy a box of cigars, but it showed they really went out and knew a little bit about me and found that book and got me, because I love old books, just like the old kind of yellow pages and the way the old book smells and that kind of stuff. And that was a really, really cool gift. I was pretty blown away from that. That was a good decade ago, but I still remember it.
I love it, buddy. I love it. That's, and those, you know, if you can remember it a decade later, that means it was pretty special. So that's really neat. I would say that for me, best present I remember, you see, it really runs along the same lines. It's not necessarily the most expensive or the trendiest thing, but the best present I can remember is my sister getting me a coffee cup with my show podcast logo on it. The old one, not the new one we have now, but the one I had before. She went and found my logo on the website and turned it into a coffee mug. And I said, this is the coolest thing. I was smiling so big when she gave this to me for Christmas. And it was just the greatest thing I could ever even conceive. I said, it took me by surprise. Really, the single greatest thing she's ever gotten me. I was so happy. I was so good. Wouldn't you like a cup like
that's
that?
That's terrific.
Oh, my gosh. It would just be...
Yeah, that's terrific because it shows that she put some thought into it and looked around and found it and got it made. That's really cool.
It's amazing.
Like you said, it's not. It could have cost her $5. That's not the point. The point is the thought that went into it and to get that made. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's really what counts. I mean, it's just the fact that she went to she thought that much of me, and it really hit my nerve really wonderfully. It was like, wow, this is pretty good. So, you know, for those of you out there shopping, sometimes the best gifts are the ones that use the most heart and not necessarily ones with the most money. So you can get expensive shoes, but that doesn't resonate as much as something that really speaks to you. And in your case, it was the cigars and the book. In my case, it was a coffee mug. So it was pretty awesome. So, all right, next question. Here we go. John in Georgia again. He asks, what is your favorite smell or scent? I have a silly answer, but what's your answer, sir?
Wait, what did you say?
What is your favorite smell? Like, do you have any favorite aromas?
Oh, Jesus. That's, actually, not to go into a too me tangent, but my actually sense of smell is pretty terrible. It's something I've always had. Just one of the some senses on myself that don't work. Maybe my eyes worked really good, so maybe the smell didn't come off as great. Like, I'm the guy who, I've had people come into my kitchen going, "You have a gas leak." And I'm like, "What?" Like, "You don't smell that?" And meanwhile, I'm 30 seconds away from exploding the entire building. So it's got to be a strong scent for me to actually get it, let alone like it. But no, I mean, I like, you know, I guess this is what I'm, this is the scent, or, all right, I have an answer for this. It's like the, I don't know what scent it is, other than the really clean scent, but just kind of like the smell of a woman after she comes out of the shower, and she's just all like happy and clean, and it just smells like kind of just like sort of like a fresh smell, I guess. It's really, I don't really know what how to describe it, but it's just a nice, it kind of relaxes you and puts you at ease.
Oh my gosh, that's good. That's a good one. That's a good answer. I like that. That's the set. Yeah, that's fantastic, Junkman. That's great. I think a lot of people would agree with you too. I really do. So, Junkman answers that his favorite smell is the scent of a woman. And would you believe it? That was my answer too. I thought that was a silly answer, but seriously, that's like the best. I can't even think of anything better. It's the best.
There are no silly answers, Dave.
Nah.
They're just silly questions.
I wouldn't even say they're silly questions, because I think, really...
No, I was just reversing the whole old saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got you there.
That's all right.
Nah, that's all. Oh, I see what you mean. Like, it's a play on the idiom. I got you, yeah. It's good stuff. Okay. Well, you know, John's apologizing for his questions, but they were pretty good questions tonight. Maybe...
John should never, first of all, never apologize. John's probably been, if you count the 3 years that we've done this, has probably had the most and most interesting questions of anyone, if you count the longevity of his questions.
Right.
You know, the amount. It's not, I don't even think there's basically everyone is going for second place when it comes to that. I mean, I know there's a lot of people lately who ask more, but his have always been tremendous. And the best part is I get credit for my answers, but it's only because the questions are so good, especially his.
Well, that's really nice of you to say, Junkman, and I believe it. I mean, I think the best thing about John's questions is it really makes you commit some thought to it. And I think that's the sign of a great question. It really intrigues the mind, and I think he's really...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's never asked about a reverse cowgirl or anything gross like that. he's very respectful in that way.
That's an excellent point. So he has one more for us. A little bit more of a mainstream question, but it's still an interesting one. He asks, who do you think will draft... Who's going to be the first guy drafted in the NFL this year? And it seems to me like it's going to be Johnny Manziel, but what do you think?
Oh, that would be such a ridiculous thing, but I hope it's not. I mean, but as we've chronicled before, I'm not the last person who knows about the NFL draft, but I don't know. I do read the stories online and stuff, and I'm starting to, at least from what I read, all of a sudden it seems like they're turning on this class of quarterbacks where for months and months all year that was the greatest class of quarterbacks ever. Now it seems people are sort of turning against that fact. So I'm going to say that the kid from South Carolina is the first guy drafted.
That's a, you know, that's a good...
Like an idiot, I sound like an idiot because I don't know his name, but the guy... You know, that guy, the other guy.
Yeah, he's more than another guy. He's a premier...
More than some other guy.
More than some other guy. And you speak of Jadeveon Clowney. I actually didn't. It didn't immediately come to mind, to be honest, so I'm kind of in the same boat as you, but I just thought of it now. Jadeveon Clowney was the guy that was going to be picked first in the beginning, and then all of a sudden Manziel was talked up so much. And then he was, like, projected to be the guy, and now it's back to being Clowney again. So I think that may end up being it in the end.
Or maybe even that team. It's the Texans, right, have the first pick?
The Texans, it depends on the team. Yep, and the Texans will have the first pick because they had such a brutal finish.
Yeah, so I think maybe they like another quarterback, so they'll trade down for a whole bunch of other picks or something. I don't know. It seems to me like if you take the quarterback first, he's got to be Peyton Manning. I mean, he's got to be just such a lock that, and I don't see that in the kid, in Johnny Manziel. I mean, he could be good, but to surround your whole draft by that guy, that seems a little shaky. Although, you know, the Texans have a good team. I know they had a horrendous year. They had a good year before that, so I don't know. It still seems like that, like, Clowney is just too rare of a talent to pass up on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I know that there is a little bit of question about whether he was going to bring it and whether he was going to pan out physically, but personally, I know that maybe he wasn't stupendous, but he was still pretty good, very good, in fact. So I think it's a great pick if you go that way. So usually you don't have busts on the defensive side of the ball quite as much when you pick someone that highly and someone is projected that high and you pick them. Usually it's not that bad. Like, the worst-case scenario is maybe be kind of good and he's still useful. So that's sort of my thinking with Clowney. Unless he gets hurt a lot, that is. If he gets hurt a lot, then it's a different story, so we will see. But I think in all honesty, he should be pretty good. So that's an excellent answer. I think they might be dumb enough to go with Manziel in the first round anyway, but we'll see. I think your answer is probably going to stand up more than mine would. So that's it for tonight's show. Junkie, I'm really thankful for you being on tonight, and I certainly hope that you can, in fact, make it out to Sanford sometime soon during the summer.
Me as well, for many reasons.
Oh, man, this is going to be good. All right. Well, we hope to, for now, have a great weekend. Enjoy your time out on the Cape, and I hope it's a nice, warm weekend for you.
Thanks, man. You too, brother.
All right, buddy. Well, that's Kevin on the Cape, and that will do it for our show tonight. Thank you very much to Kevin on the Cape for joining us, along with Jerry and Piscataway for a cameo, and the ultimate warrior's ghost somewhere towards the end of the hour. That was I got a real kick out of that. But anyway, that's it for us tonight. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dave Medina. Enjoy the Masters. We'll see you next time.